Welcome to episode 59 of Published. Today I'll speak with Greenleaf's art director, Neil Gonzalez, about book design elements and why a well-designed cover and interior are vital to your book's success.
Welcome to Published, a podcast by Greenleaf Book Group, where we'll discuss the ins and outs of the publishing industry, from writing a book and finding the right publisher, to gearing up for a book launch. And now, here's your host, Greenleaf Book Group CEO, Tanya Hall.
Welcome back to Published. In this episode, we're discussing all things book design. The old saying goes, never judge a book by its cover, but of course, we all know in the book industry that is exactly what happens. An eye-catching cover is key to attracting a reader and making sure your book is taken seriously. The cover design is the first impression a reader gets of your book, so if your design is strong, a reader can assume your writing is also. You want your book cover to be congruent with your genre and showcase themes from within the book so that readers get a taste of what's to come. There's nothing worse than a misleading book cover. You don't want your book to miss its target audience because it didn't look the part. In this episode, we'll also be discussing the importance of your book's interior design. This is one part of the design process that many authors overlook. And the way your text is formatted on each page, where the number falls, how your chapter headings are designed, these are all seemingly small elements that can really elevate your book's overall quality. In this episode, Neil gives us his insight into the book design process and how an author can make sure their book design attracts readers and makes a lasting impression. Let's get into the interview. Neil, welcome to Published.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So why don't you start out by telling our listeners who haven't listened to all of our prior episodes who you are and what you do at Greenleaf?
You're telling me no one listened to all your podcasts?
Yeah, the horror.
I'm Neil Gonzalez, and I'm the art director at Greenleaf Book Group. And I've been with the company for, it'll be 15 years next month, actually. It's crazy how fast time flies. And got a cat in front of me. She wants to join the podcast. But I've been the art director for about 7 years now. And it's fun. So what I do is work with the team of designers we have. We have about 4 in-house designers. And we all work on the different book covers and book interiors and marketing materials. And pretty much like create the book, the look and feel of the book. And then we prep the files and get them ready to send to the printer. We also work with the editors closely to input any corrections to the actual text. So while we are focused on like the visual aspect, we do manipulate the words with the help of the editors, because the editors don't have the direct access to the InDesign files that we work in. So once the book is poured and laid out, at that point, really, the designer is the only ones that can go in and change the text around. So we work with the editors for that. And, you know, the project managers help us guide through it. So really, like, the designers, the project managers, and the editors all make up the production side of Greenleaf, in which we create the physical book and ebook.
And you guys create all kinds of different books from various genres, and lately quite a few of them. So where do you find inspiration for all of these projects that come across your desk?
It's hard to do that, you know, because like business books tend to be in the same vein. You know, they are different, but they have a certain look and feel. So how do you kind of reinvent that wheel? That's pretty challenging. Whereas novels have their own unique story and a lot more to offer as far as like visuals and inspiration. But really, for the different types of books we work on, we have a project launch meeting where the lead designer meets with the project manager and editor to kind of like officially launch it in production. And really, once I hear that title, like I'll get a bright idea just in my head. It'll kind of come to me. Like if I just hear it, I'll like, whoa, like, you know, I'll have that idea that I kind of write down so I don't forget. But really, like, it kind of hits me. And usually that first initial idea is the best one. It just kind of comes to me. And it's all attributed to the title itself. a lot of times, like, there's keywords in the title that will just like trigger something in your mind. So it's nice when titles do have like visual words in them that a designer can pull from. That's really helpful for us, as opposed to something that's just so metaphorical, you don't know what to, you know, convey visually on the cover. That's really challenging. And there are different types of approaches to handle that when it happens. But as far as doing more research with the book at that time, we have the manuscript available. The manuscript's still in progress of being worked on, but we have, you know, pretty much the whole manuscript. It might change a little bit, but for the most part, like, we have it there. So we have the availability to read through it. We have the availability to talk to the author and the lead editor. So we have a lot of research available to us or help. Sometimes we aren't able to read the whole book. You know, like I mentioned, some business books tend to be more cut and dry. So I find you can skim that and you don't need to read every page. And a lot of times those books tend to communicate what the book's about through the title or subtitle. Mm-hmm. The subtitle can be really helpful as well. There are a lot of keywords within that. But then doing image research. So once, like, I kind of get the gist of what the book's about, I'll do image research, because a lot of the covers use images. So I'll start looking up those keywords. Sometimes just typing in the title in a search engine will come up with tons of different ideas. So it's fun to kind of brainstorm. And that's something, as a designer, I learned going through design school, you know, how to brainstorm and do research, doing like word lists and drawing little thumbnails, just kind of racking your brain. And that's actually a great way to come up with good ideas. Just all you have to do is think. A lot of times, when we were working in the office, I would have to drive home, and I live like on the opposite side of town. So I'd sit in traffic for 45 minutes to an hour. And that was a great time just to like think of the project. You know, if I had a book that I'm working on that week and I'm in the middle of brainstorming ideas, all I got to do is kind of think. It's great. You don't necessarily need anything else to do that. You don't need a computer or pen and paper. It that's handy to do, but really just like thinking about it, you can come up with some neat ideas. And then I'll just remember those and write them down. And sometimes that's what's kind of fun about being a designer. Like, when you're assigned a book, you kind of like are married to it for those 2 weeks. You just like live with it. As I go to bed, I'll think about it. You know, something like I think about constantly. And I find, like, even when you're going to bed at night, as you're like falling asleep, you know, your brain is still working, and I can just pop in that like book title and start thinking about it. And a lot of times some good ideas come from that like little twilight area right before you go to bed. In fact, I remember like Paul McCartney from the Beatles said that's where he came up with the idea for Yesterday, the song. He just got that melody as he was like about to fall asleep. And I find like that's this magic little time to like where your brain does crazy things. I don't always rely on that time. I don't like, you know, set my watch to do that, but it's happened before, and it's just fun. That's just one of the many weird places you can pull inspiration from. But going back to image research, that's really helpful, because you will see a lot of obvious search or, you know, like images that you type it in. If you type in a key or a cat, a cat will come up. But as you dig further down, you'll see some weird ones that you might not have thought about. And it can trigger other ideas. Like, it's neat just to see what you can come up with, what's kind of already out there in that internet. And then you'll always be surprised. There's some images like, oh, I never thought of that, or a combination of images. And really, like, it's kind of cool to combine images or ideas, because everyone can put an image of a cat on a cover if it's a book about cats, but to like combine it with another thing that the book might be conveying is kind of what sets it apart. Like, kind of combining ideas, I find, is really a good way to make the book unique and use any images that like you can find just kind of combining ideas and images.
Yeah.
And also inspirations all around you, like kind of like I was saying earlier. I forgot which book I read it in, but like just taking a little walk down the road, taking a break and walking down your street, like the colors of a tree, you know, that's changing colors or something can inspire you as a new color palette. And you can incorporate that. You might think that's pretty, so I'll take a picture of it and then just keep that in my back pocket and look at it, you know, when the time's right. It's like, oh, there's that beautiful tree. I'll kind of incorporate those colors if it's appropriate to, you know, the subject matter. But that's something that you don't always think about. You got to kind of be, your radar has to be on at all times in a way, to, because there's inspiration all around you. And if you're not like looking for it or open to seeing it, then you're going to miss it. But it could be right in front of your face.
Mm-hmm. Spoken like a true artist. So now if you were able to boil it down into a few key points, what would you say are the important elements of a successful cover design?
I always kind of follow this rule of keep it simple, stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to overdo it. You can easily overdo it if you try to add everything on the cover, and you can't. You got to boil it down to that, like that essence of what the book is conveying. Really, just if you can find that one key idea and present it in an interesting visual manner, then that's going to be more powerful than trying to cover everything that every chapter is trying to cover. A lot of art authors like the clean and simple covers, as do I, because they're more powerful than just like a hodgepodge of everything. So really trying to find that one powerful idea and conveying that is going to be the better approach as to trying to cram everything on it. And sometimes we'll have to, when we're working with authors, we'll have to mention that to them. You just can't shoehorn everything on. Sure, there's like 20 chapters and each chapter covers a different thing, topic, but you don't want to do that. You know, that's why it's great to have a strong title and a subtitle that can support that. And basically trying to work in tangent with that title by, you know, the visual means. And it goes beyond that. You want it to look professional and have great type and all that. But it's really powerful if you can strip away the title and subtitle and just see the visual aspect and get what the book is about, you know, by not reading anything on the cover, but like seeing it. That's like a great way to go about designing a book, at least trying to cover, you know, not every book can lend itself to that, but it's good to cover every aspect and kind of cover your basis. Like, I think this will work for one option, you know, and that's what I do when we do design. We come up with different varieties and approaches that we feel will work, because there's never just like one idea. There's always multiple ideas that can work. And then if you can provide four great options, that's the best case scenario, because then we feel all of these options will work. And it's just a preference at that point, or what you feel will be the best fit for your book.
Good. So we know that cover design, well, all design, I suppose, changes, evolves over time. And there are trends that turn up in certain genres. And how do you personally stay on top of those types of swings in trends?
Yeah, it's good to stay on top of trends. And like you said, they're constantly changing. I find, you know, there's tons of websites and Twitter handles or accounts that you can find. So like on Twitter, there's a lot of book related stuff. There's a lot of bad design out there too. You got to be careful of. Like, I don't want that to inspire me. Of course, like art is subjective, but most people know if a book cover is well designed, you know, you can easily see a bad cover and know it's bad compared to a great designed cover. But there's this one Twitter handle, Spine Magazine, that I follow just for like to keep up with stuff, and they're on top of trends and stuff like that. So they will showcase books and new designs. And then just following other favorite studios, like Face Out Studios is one I really look up to. They have some awesome stuff. So I check out their Twitter a lot. whenever there's like an awards list announced from Grafis or Communication Arts, it's cool to look at like the winning covers and designs of that year and see like what why they picked that and like what made it such an award-winning design. And then it's fun just to go to Barnes & Noble and browse. That's really fun, just like a kid in a candy store going and looking at all these books. You can, it's overwhelming because there's so many good designs out there, but it's cool to see what's current, you know, and being sold at stores right now. And it's good to like follow trends, but it's also good to kind of follow your own design instinct. And sometimes I like to just go with what my heart's telling me to design, you know, and do my own research, like what I was talking about earlier, because a lot of times I can find great ideas and new styles and come up with something I didn't think I would have, you know, it come up with that, like, I think works really well. So you don't want to just always follow something, but, you know, kind of keep up with it. And of course you have that ability to do that. If you want, you can follow a trend. But I also like doing my own thing and, you know, hopefully starting my own trend.
Are there any trends that you've noticed are starting to arise lately?
Yeah, it's interesting that we have this modern technology with computers and fancy Photoshop stuff, this and that. But a lot of books that I've seen that have won awards actually are like kind of throwback designs, going back to like almost a vintage look. Mm-hmm. It's really weird. And it's neat because I love that old style, and they did that without computers. But, you know, it's almost like cut out flat shapes, just kind of arranged in bold type. So it's weird. It's almost like going back to this Saul Bass type of design style. And it's neat, but it's funny how it's come back. What's old is new again, it seems. And then another trend is like illustrative covers, where they'll use like get an illustrator to kind of draw or, you know, create a piece of art to use as main visual. And then there's this big trend I saw where like every book was doing it. It was just these big, colorful, almost abstract pieces of art or collage type of image in the background. And then the title and author name would be a big, bold, sans serif type of font. And it was a really neat, beautiful type of design, but it got overkill in my opinion. And at that point, like you see so much of that style, you probably would recognize it if I showed you an image of one, but it was just like, they all start to look the same. And then at that point, you're not going to stand out. Yeah, you'll follow a trend, but it's almost going to work against you. Like, that's the thing with trends, like eventually they're going to get burned out and they're not going to be as cool anymore. And you got to like, someone has to start this next trend, and whatever that will be, it will be interesting to see. I always harken it back to like the grunge era in music, the early 90s when Nirvana came out, like they were the new thing and they kind of busted out of the shell of the hair metal scene. Everyone was doing that same thing and it got old. So the younger kids wanted something new. And then Nirvana came out, and then every band after Nirvana was doing the exact same thing. And then by 1994 and 1995 and 1996, like it was just oversaturated. Everyone wants to have like that new underground thing, you know, before it gets popular. Mm-hmm. And I guess just art's like that in general, like, you know, you always want to be on top of the cool thing and not be like that same old thing that everyone's doing. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to keep up with it, though. About the same time, I like to do my own thing, you know, because like you don't want to be just a follower, but you want to try to be a trendsetter yourself.
For sure. And you mentioned standing out. We talk to mm-hmm. our authors a lot about the line we have to walk between fitting in and being competitive mm-hmm. within a genre and yet standing out on the shelf, which is a tricky balance. So how do you approach that, and particularly in making a book competitive within a genre which may have expectations around design?
Yeah, that's something we do talk about, trying to fit in but stand out at the same time. And I think like business books, they tend to look like business books. You know, you don't want a business book that doesn't really look like it. I mean, it's otherwise it's not going to be taken serious. Like you want to do what you got to do to be genre appropriate. You know, you want it to look like a business book, but at the same time, you want to push boundaries. So that's tricky. You know, a lot of business books I find are more straightforward and to the point. But the thing about that, like the readers are looking for that. You know, they just want to get to the point. I've learned that. There is the big trend of the Malcolm Gladwell style book design where it's very minimal, white background, just like very clean, and usually one small graphical element somewhere in the middle of the cover. And that was huge. That actually came out when I first started working at Greenleaf. So, and it's still popular to this day. It's like just an approach. But at that point, also, it doesn't stand out too much. It looks good. But it kind of like, within each design, you have different elements that can kind of bring something new and different. So the type of font you use, the image. So there are other elements that play into the overall composition and how a book looks. So you could kind of use that templated design, but depending on the type of font and colors you use, you know, can make it stand out. So that's like a good way. Sometimes it's not easy to be as straightforward with a design. Sometimes, like I mentioned earlier, like a title just doesn't give you anything to go off of, and it's very cut and dry. And at that point, it's too late to change the title also. So we can, sometimes just the like clean type treatment is, can be very strong, especially for business books. It's to the point. That's where like the type skill comes into play. That's one of the things where some like self-published books, you can tell because like the type, it's so important. And most people don't even think twice about like the type and the font and the spacing, but it can be very powerful and nice. But also like within our Greenleaf imprint, it's nice when we get to use printing technology for the books. So like we can use emboss where you lift the title, like a piece of metal die is pressed into the paper on the cover, and you can like lift the title. A lot of people have seen that before. And you can use spot gloss. So you have, if you have like a matte cover, you can add that gloss to it, which will kind of play with the light at the right angle. And those little key things are something that can help make a book stand out compared to a book that might be a little more not fancy. It gives it like this perceived value that just really makes it like, oh, wow, this book must be good because it has all these like fancy bells and whistles. Although we don't always rely on that, it's just a nice added enhancement we can do. Mm-hmm. So I always believe that the foundation of the design needs to be strong. We don't have to rely on those bells and whistles, but when you have a great foundation of a design, adding those will just like put it over the top. And then if you see it in a bookstore, it'll just look a little more professional and kind of be a little more eye-catching. So that's something nice that we can do from like a printing standpoint. Sometimes when we're not able to do that printing technology, just having that strong foundational design is strong enough.
All right, Neil, when we think of book design, I think we naturally think of the book cover. I certainly did when I came into publishing. And then over time, you understand and appreciate the importance of a strong interior design. So can you speak to that for authors who maybe aren't thinking along those lines? Like, why is the interior so important? And what are some of the ways that you integrate an overall design feel so that it continues from whatever you're establishing in that cover?
Yeah, a lot of people, when you talk about book design, everyone thinks of the cover, but they don't really think of the interior as much. It's really weird. It's like the, you know, it's not given its due, but it's almost as important as the cover. Sure, everyone judges the book by its cover, and rightly so, but the interior can work in tangent with the cover. A lot of times we bring in elements from the cover to kind of make it a cohesive design. So the fonts, if there's any imagery or a theme that the book is presenting, maybe like the title of it or the subtitle will want to convey, we'll bring that in somehow and use it as an icon or something if it's necessary. You know, we don't always do that, but there's different types of approaches for the interior design. So some books or business books will want to be a little more engaging, I guess, visually in the interior. So we can use little icons to kind of convey like certain sections of the books. A lot of business books have different sections, like, you know, an end of chapter type of like tip section or a chapter rundown. And we can use little elements like that to kind of visually make that section stand apart from other ones. So they're easy to like go to. So if it was like a shaded box with a little icon next to the header, you know, you could flip through and easily visual see that, you know, and read that if you wanted to jump to sections. It's easier as like a visual guide. That isn't completely necessary, whereas like novels are just straight text. But in that case, you know, like the font you're choosing is super important. The spacing, you want it to be readable and enjoyable to be read. You could have a beautiful cover and then some horrible typesetting inside, and it's just almost going to bring down the whole book because no one's going to want to read it, and it's going to be hard to get what the book's trying to convey. Like, it's kind of pointless if you have a great cover and great words in the interior, or a story or manuscript that isn't being conveyed appropriately through the actual type. And that goes for like the leading, which that's more technical stuff, but it's the space, how spaced out the lines of text are. You don't want it to be too much, but you don't want to be too tight either. So there's a lot of like smaller, intricate little things that most people don't know about, but it's important. And how it goes into the text and the design of the interior.
Yeah. Long story short, leave it to the hands of a professional.
Oh yeah. You can't really do that yourself either. Like, everyone thinks they're a little bit of a designer, and the covers, yeah, that makes a little more sense because everyone sees the covers, has always, everyone's read a book, and it's that first like impression type of thing. But on that more technical side, it's much harder to create a nice readable interior, especially like if you don't know what you're doing. Yeah, definitely leave it to a professional.
Yeah. So what are the typical mistakes that you see? We get some, not to just diss self-published books, but quite often these authors are working in a vacuum without the help of a professional designer. So what are the typical mistakes you see for, I'm guessing you're going to probably say covers, but interiors too.
Yeah. And continuing on the interior, that's something I see a lot. We'll see books that have kind of been submitted to us that are already designed, and you can just immediately see the big difference and how they're not going to work. Basically, they don't look professional. As far as the interior, like the fonts are very important. Really, like if you have a lot of text, you're going to want to use a serif font. And the serif fonts are the ones, the more traditional classic looking letters and fonts with the little like swashes on the tails and stuff like that. And those actually serve a purpose to help guide the eye from letter to letter and word to word. So as opposed to a more modern sans serif, that fonts that don't have those little swashes, it's not going to be as enjoyable to read. Sure, you can read it just fine, but if you're going to read a lot of text, it's much easier and better to use a certain type of font, the serif fonts. Sometimes we'll do like smaller sections in sans serif. That's not to say they can't work together, but that's a big thing I've seen. And like there's hyphenation, is getting into a little more technical aspects, but most books are justified where the right side is a hard line. You know, all the words butt up to this line, and that makes it easier to read to go from line to line. But once you do that, then you got to have your hyphenation settings correct. So you don't want words breaking so weird that you can't read it, or you don't want to not use hyphenations at all. I've seen that a lot where people, it's like, I don't like hyphenations. I don't want my words to like be broken and split up onto two lines. But when you take that hyphenation off, it creates huge spaces and gaps between words, which are called rivers. And that just looks horrible. And that doesn't work at all. And that's a big telltale sign of like a kind of self-published, self-design interior. Yeah. And then as far as covers, the type, like I was talking about earlier, how important that is. I can't stress it enough. Like, people tend to think, oh, you just put your little type tool in there and type the title, and that's it. But really, there's so much more. There's like the kerning between letters, which is moving the actual letters itself within the word. There's the type of font you use. Is it going to be appropriate for, you know, the book? If you have like a modern sci-fi book, you don't want an old school looking, you know, type of type that's not going to match. So that's important. You know, the image itself, like you can have a pretty picture, beautiful picture of a tree, and then you can just ruin it with horrible type. That's really easy to do, and I've seen it a lot. So really, like, using the type and then the right image and kind of using them together, that's the hard part, to kind of create one cohesive unit. That's really like the tricky part of design. But I've seen a lot of people where they just slap a stock photo and then type your text. Sure, that looks like a book, but it doesn't look like a good one. And it's not going to look like a professional or interesting book that people are going to want to read. So it's not as easy as you think it is to design a book cover or interior.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you've given us tons of great advice today. Any parting words of wisdom or additional advice for our listeners?
Yeah, I would say if you're gonna, you know, look into designing a book or something, don't do it yourself. You can't just take a crash course and do it yourself. It's best to leave it to the professionals. You know, and if you're gonna find a designer, find one that has book experience, and then trust them. So all designers will usually have a website and examples of their work. So it's great if you can see that they've done book design in the past and that design is up to your standards and looks professional. And then at that point, I think that's a good candidate to reach out to that designer, talk about pricing or whatever, and go from there. But once that gets started and they start to design your book, give them trust. Don't try to micromanage every little thing. Sure, you can have some suggestions and changes. I've seen that so many times. We've worked with illustrators, and you can get either an author or someone overly involved, and it'll kind of water down the overall design if you get too much feedback, or if you try to please everybody. If you can't please everybody, you kind of got to stick to what your vision is, and then let the illustrator designer see that through. I've found sometimes, like, if you send covers to an author or someone, sometimes they'll send it to all their friends and family, and everyone will chime in with some type of feedback. You're not going to please everyone, and everyone's going to be a critic. Everyone's going to have something they think should be changed, and you can't please them all. And if you try to address every instance, you're just going to water the cover down, and it's going to be so boring and overly safe. It's actually going to work against you.
Awesome. That's good advice. And you've been very generous with your feedback today, Neil. Thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, that was fun. My pleasure.
That's it for our episode today with Neil. We hope you enjoyed learning about book design. For notes and resources from today's show, go to greenleafbookgroup.com/episode59. You can also find advice for writing, publishing, and promoting your work in my book, Ideas, Influence, and Income, which you can learn more about at ideasinfluenceandincome.com. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever it is you listen to your podcasts. It means a lot to have your feedback and will help us make sure we're answering your publishing questions. A big thank you to Eleanor Fishborn, who produces the Published podcast. We'll be back next month with another new episode.
Thanks for listening to Published. To learn more, please visit greenleafbookgroup.com. And remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.